Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is James Dick with North Florida Writer Live. And that was not My Country, Tis of Thee, although it was the same music. That was God Save the Queen, the British national anthem. Today we're going to talk about Great Britain, or the United Kingdom, British Isles, whatever you want to call it, that composite of small states that create the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales. And the reason we're talking about them today is because on Tuesday, they're going to have a huge vote in England, one that's going to have some very, very major consequences on the future of Britain, but even on the future of the Western world. The pictures that I'll go over in just a minute, I want to just highlight one because it has to do with my opening remarks. It's Big Ben. Big Ben is the huge clock tower that's in the area they call Westminster. It's adjacent to Westminster Abbey and, of course, the Houses of Parliament. And Big Ben is very, very well known. It's a tourist photo symbol. That old photo that I show on the site today was from a family photo album. The picture was taken back in the 1950s. Big Ben is a landmark representative symbol of Britain and British sovereignty, something which has been seriously eroded since the United Kingdom opted to join the European Union. And in case you're not aware of the current goings-on related to the EU and the UK these days, the British citizenry will go to the polls on Thursday to decide whether or not they wish to remain in the European Union or opt out of it and go independently. There's been a big swelling of effort ever since Britain entered the EU because Britain actually doesn't really consider itself European. It considers itself something separate. It's not attached to Europe, it's just close to it. Now, the Leave movement, which is known on Twitter with the hashtag #PoundBrexit for British Exit, which supports return to full British sovereignty, appears to be in the lead at the moment, although there are some polls saying that it's a toss-up or could possibly even lean the other way. But if the move to remove Britain from the European Union holds true, it will be a modern-day shot heard around the world concerning individual national sovereignty and independence. Why does this hold significance for we Americans? Well, the answer is that it will show the movement to return to sovereignty for the nation, a concept which is widely supported here, that it's also strongly present in the UK and growing in other European nations as well. The desire to maintain our sovereignty is strong among Americans since it naturally opposes United Nations refugee migration decisions made under the guise of the New World Order or world governance. Both the United Nations and the European Union appear to be joined at the hip on just such issues. As a matter of fact, the International Court in Brussels is pretty much used by both bodies routinely. If our British brothers and sisters pull the world's fifth largest economy out of the overbearing EU, the movement will likely gain further ground quickly throughout Europe, which is seeing cultures destroyed by the unaccountable EU bureaucrats. Today, Britain is subjected to a legal system in Brussels, which is responsible for approximately 60% of the laws to which British citizens are held accountable. And the process includes immigration law. And these very laws are adjudicated by an international court system not based in their homeland, clearly a huge step toward the absolute end of any concept of national sovereignty. The similarity to the things accepted and pushed by Prime Minister Cameron's government in Britain closely parallels the idea of an international government which our American president and so many Washington politicians support. And things like unpublished trade deals and lack of borders and sovereignty, things which don't provide any valid reasoning for American support by the citizenry, have brought forth the current American distaste for international overreach and control. These are the very reasons for the birth of the Trump movement, and if Britain approves Brexit, the push for major change and overhaul will only grow larger here, likely benefiting Mr. Trump. So stay tuned as we watch for the results on Thursday. By this time Thursday, we should start seeing the results trickling in, because after all, it is 6 hours later in merry old England, and we'll also start seeing the aftermath from it. National sovereignty should never be granted to a world body, much of which is run and supported by tyrannical nations. And wouldn't it be a pleasant surprise if our old master from over 200 years ago leads the way? Go Britannia. Make Britain proud again by controlling your own destiny and setting a marker for other democracy-loving nations as well. We need to continue to grow that spirit here as well. And indeed, I think we are doing so here in America. Real quickly, the pictures. The first, of course, was Big Ben. I told you it was from a family picture taken in the 50s. Then there's the sign Brexit. That's one of the campaign slogans and signs that are seen all over Britain these days. Then there's a picture of David Cameron, kind of a squishy guy, a milquetoast kind of prime minister. He loves Obama. They seem to get along very, very well. He's not a very strong leader. I'm sure Winston is rolling over in his grave as we speak. Then there's the EU headquarters. Not only is it an ugly building, but it does a lot of ugly things. They are the ones who are actually dictating to the different countries of Europe where the refugees go, in unison with the United Nations, which runs the program. So we've got a body that is really almost Muslim-oriented now that's determining comes to America. Gee, I wonder if that has anything to do with why we don't see any Christian refugees. Then there's the word liberty, and it's basically just talking about the fact that the people are supposed to be in charge. And that's what this sovereignty thing is all about. The people feel like nobody listens to them, not just in England, or Germany or France, but also here in the United States. Then there's Big Brother 1984. If you look at this New World Order process and the way it tends to want to run, like with UN Agenda 21, boy, I'm telling you, Orwell is right on the money. That's what's going on. Then Freedom Now, if we don't get our freedom back, we'll be behind chains forever. You just might not see them as chains, but they will be. Finally, the cross, Bible, and the flag, representative of the founding of the United States under God. When we're under God and when we listen to God, we do great things. When we turn our eyes from Him, they don't turn out so well. Sadly, I think that's what's happening to us today. So without further ado, let me bring on my routine sidekick, Mark Collier, and we're going to discuss this whole fiasco that's going on in Europe and ultimately it'll be coming here. Mark's coming on right now. Mark, how
Jim,
are you?
I'm here. Oh, I'm here.
That's good. I'm glad you're here.
It's pushing 90 degrees, and it's a little warm in the mountains, but that's good because I'm inside in the comfort of my own home with the air conditioning going.
I have no sympathy for your struggling in the mountains with the heat. That just doesn't. Down here in the Florida swamps, you know, we steam. You just sweat a little bit on the brow. But anyway, what do you think?
We roast quietly. We don't steam.
Okay. There you go.
Go ahead.
Got it. Well, I want to ask you, you know, it looks to me like this thing could go either way. It's very, very close. Some people say it's leaning towards out. Then they say that after that, you know, member of parliament was murdered, that it might be swinging the other way. It's very, very close, and there's still 10% supposedly undecided. I would think that the undecided would more likely opt to go against. Usually undecided do, because if they're going to go for, they make the decision quicker because it's something that they already understand and know, but they're still thinking about the other side. I don't know, but in any case, it's whatever happens, even if they vote to stay in, you know, Cameron's got huge problems because he's told them all these things that he's gotten the EU to give in on, and they're really just kind of like the way Obama does, you know, a piece of paper that says nothing. And the British are kind of interesting. You know, they're fed up, and if they see later, a year or two from now, that it's no better than it was, that he just smoked them, this is going to come right back. This thing will never end until something is done to deal with, you know, the concerns that the public has about their safety, about their sovereignty, about their freedom, and about keeping British culture. Because that's really, the British culture is being just destroyed.
That's a good summary. I think you hit it, because I've been reading some reports out of the UK, and one by what I would consider sort of their Time magazine, and they boiled it down to three things that the Brits have to concern themselves with. The economy, in other words, how tied are they to all of this? And the free trade agreements across, you know, jurisdictional lines, they would be at a slight disadvantage if they got out of that. The second is, of course, immigration, and how they're being told what to do by institutions that are not British, per se. I mean, these are bureaucracies that sit in quiet and decide, oh, you're going to take 300,000 immigrants, okay, where's Britain going to put them? I mean, I think that's basically what these Leave guys are mostly concerned about. Then you have identity, and this is where I think, you know, the British culture, American culture, some of the Anglo-Saxon values come in. And I'm just going to read two parts of two small paragraphs. Remainders generally believe in community and tend to define it as broadly as Europe or even more globally than that. Okay, they give primacy to the need for countries to work together. All right, now here's where it gets weird. They believe that ceding a certain amount of control leads to freedom, movement of trade, ideas, blah, blah, blah. He goes on. Okay, the leavers, people want to get out of there, fear that Britain inside the EU lacks sovereignty and control of its own destiny. Bingo, right on the money. They believe in community too, but define it as their friends, families, neighbors, and compatriots, i.e., you know, small towns. They believe that seizing control of their governance is the only way to achieve what's important for their country, staying strong, protecting jobs, directing trade as they wish. All right. Now, having said that, I think that's sort of an interesting adjunct to what you're talking about, because what we're doing here in this country and the rise of Trump, you know, it's interesting that 12 months after Trump got started, this thing sort of pops up over in Britain. So obviously somebody's feeling the same thing across the pond, and they are, you know, reacting to some of the same things we are. It's interesting that all of a sudden it's all about autonomy, sovereignty, about the ability of citizens to direct their government. Now think about this for a minute. We in this country have always felt, until recently I guess, that power flows from the citizens to the government. What we're saying is this manifestation of a new world order, power flows from these bureaucracies to the citizens. And frequently we're being cloaked and, as you pointed out, barbed wire. Can't do this, can't do that, can't decide this for yourself. No, this is already, you know, we've already said we're going to do a TPP, all that kind of thing. But I think this is a natural reaction to the loss of this sovereignty, this individual decision-making. You know, it's a tough call for Britain, because Britain is the fifth largest country economy in the world. And, you know, one way or another, you know, aside from fear-mongering and you know, some of the, oh, my gosh, it's all going to come crashing down kind of rhetoric that you see from some of these folks or hear, they will suffer some consequences, but I think that what's happening is this notion of nationalism and self-government, a right to, you know, self-determination, good old-fashioned principles, are starting to reemerge. You see it in France particularly. You're starting to see it, in, you know, obviously manifested in Britain, of course, here in America. I think it's a good sign, Jim. I think it's one of the most positive things, aside from, you know, Trump getting up there and telling it like it is. This is actually starting to show that people are beginning to get it. What say you?
Well, you know, I think this is all coming together all around the world because it's a concerted effort around the world by what I'll call the tyrannical elite. You call them the Bilderbergers, call them whatever you want to call them, but it's all these kinds of groups of people that want power. And they've basically dispensed with the concept of a nation state. They don't care about that anymore. They want this one big mob, and as long as they have the control over it, then everybody else is a serf, which that's why I said it plays right into 1984. If you remember in 1984 where it talked about the different wars going on at the same time, you know, they had these different parts of the world that were divided up into units. They really weren't countries, but they'd have wars between them periodically because it was a way to build up the fervor to get people focused on something other than what's being done to them. And it does make me wonder sometimes with some of these wars we get into if it's not the same thing going on. Because, you know, we go into a place like Iraq and Afghanistan, and we do a pretty good job, and then we pull out, but yet we really don't quite pull out. And we're always talking about possibly having to go back in, and it just keeps things on edge, and people are concerned about that, so they forget about these other things. The other thing is, and this is the broadest word I think that applies or concept. I think this all is driven by political correctness. I think it's why political correctness was created, because political correctness is nothing but a lie. If you look at what we do and what we say, nothing could be a better case than, you know, Orlando last week. You know, everybody saw what happened. Everybody knew what the guy said. Everybody knew that he said he was representative of a certain entity, and yet the DOJ, you know, particularly the Attorney General, refuses, you know, tried to block it all out, but she got so much blowback that she finally had to release the tapes, and that actually made it worse for Obama, because, you know, the cover up is always, well, it's not always worse because we don't even know what's happened now, but in the past, the cover up was always worse than the crime. So you know, the more they keep pushing this political correctness, I mean, I just see America just revolting against that. And I don't mean in the sense of going to war, but I mean, they just turn it off. They just turn their ears off. They're sick of hearing it. You're even seeing young people, and everybody's worried about young people, and of course the millennials, but there are a lot of younger people that are really starting to stand up about the truth. I don't know if you saw the, unrelated to this particular incident, but that young, he was an African-American young man, 16 years old, in a debate, I think it was in Philadelphia, I'm not sure what city it was in, but where they were talking about what Black Lives Matter is doing and all this stuff, and this guy just stood up for Trump. And there was a big older guy just in his face, and this guy kept calm and collected, but just shredded the guy's comments. And so I see that kind of thing going on here, and I think what it tells me is what I believe from my religious background is that if you stay with it and you keep things focused where they need to be, the truth will win out. You cannot let them destroy the truth. What they do is they tell a lie so many times that people start to accept it. It's the same principle on sales, you know, seven, you got to be touched seven times before it sinks in. Well, it's the same thing with lies. If a guy gets up there and lies over and over again, you know, this is the religion of peace or whatever we want to say, you know, sooner or later, a lot of people just kind of tune out and it just kind of sinks in even if they don't know it did. So it's very incumbent upon those who want to seek and deal with the truth to fire back and stay right in there with it, smack them head on. That's my big objection with what the Republicans have been doing and what the conservatives in Britain have been doing, because they allow themselves to be outnumbered and overrun by the opposition because they accept their premises. And you should never accept the premises. You know, when a guy gets up and says, well, we all know that guns kill people, you know, I mean, so you need to answer back, well, no, guns don't kill people. People using guns kill people. You need to throw it right back in their face. But people don't do it.
Well,
so
Jim,
you said
a mouthful there, and I believe
you're
probably right on the money. People are a little tired of being lied to. That's probably a given at this point because people are starting to wake up. That's also a given.
Yeah.
But it's also this surge of nationalism, and you're right. You know, individual self-determination has started to kick into gear. You know, Orwell couldn't have possibly imagined how our system would have functioned, but he had a general idea. He thought it'd go through the television as opposed to the internet. But we're being filtered, we're being manipulated. People want the truth. Now, when you're talking about that instance of that young African-American man, he probably stands a pretty good chance of making it in the world because he seems like a more independent thinker. Some of these folks just refuse to actually confront the real truth. I mean, what happened on the, what is that? I don't even want to talk about the name of it, with Joy Behar, you know. They're talking about Trump's work. Look, that's the absolute wrong thing. And you're right. It hits certain airwaves. It gets repeated 7, 10, 12 times. And people go, oh, that must be true. No, it's not. Because we have to become, I think, more critical thinkers. I think what you're getting at is, you know, use your noodle for something besides a hat rack. Okay? And you have to filter some of this stuff out. That's kind of where I wanted to jump in on that. And this Brexit thing sort of has brought the whole thing to a head. Because obviously
if it's going on
in Britain, which is, sort of our ancestral genealogy, if you want to call it that, it's probably going to spread to the United States, Canada, and Australia, New Zealand, and all that as well. Go ahead.
Well, you know, speaking of Britain, I mean, I look at Cameron, you know, and I compare him to Obama. I mean, look at Cameron. Cameron was educated at Eton, and then he went to Oxford. So he was in the upper crust. He probably had a silver spoon in his mouth all of his life. And then he comes out and he becomes, you know, becomes the prime minister. And he enjoys the pomp and circumstance and all that stuff. But the guy is not very smart. I mean, he really isn't. You can take him and compare him to a lot of these leaders. You know, you think about it, even here in the United States, they all go to Harvard. Most of them do. You know, it's a clique, even if the Republicans and Democrats. And that's why I like to see when a guy comes in, oh, he went to the University of Oklahoma or somewhere else. I like to see that because it means he's at least from a little bit different. But anyway, so Cameron, you know, he's basically shown a complete disregard for his citizens. I mean, he supported everything to do with loss of sovereignty, and he goes over to the EU and talks about it because he's, well, I gotta have a little more independence. And, you know, they tell him, oh, well, you can do this and you can do that. They probably told him he can still fly the British flag or something. I mean, I don't know. These guys, they want to control everything. So what you've got in England – now, let me tell you about England because I've spent some time there, and it's a beautiful country. I mean, it really was. I mean, it's not so much anymore, particularly in the cities because it's dangerous. But Britain, I always called it the land of the queue because they were very, very polite. It's also the land of ivory soap. Because guys, blue-collar guys even, that went to work, one of the perks from their job is they were able to take a shower at the end of the day at work. So they would go to work in their tweed coat. I'm not talking about coal miners, but if they were in any kind of a, you know, office kind of setting or whatever, they'd go to work in their tweed coat, and at the end of the day, they, you know, if they're in the factory, they change clothes, and they come back, take a shower, clean up, and they'd be on the subway at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it smelled like ivory soap. And these things, well, how in the hell do they do this? Because, I mean, man, I grew up in a shipyard town. If you got on a city bus at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, those boys have been working hard, welders and whatever else they do. You know, God bless them. But, you know, so that's what it was.
Yeah,
but,
leave the windows down,
it was just the genteel nature of them, you know. And they queue. I mean, like, I was waiting for a bus one time up in Kensington to go back to the airport. We had been over there for 10 days and go back to the airport to fly back to Frankfurt. And you go to the bus stop and the British queue up. I mean, they just get in a natural line. And this one guy, everybody that got on that bus we knew was going to the airport, so they were going somewhere, probably out of the country, most of them. So anyway, this one guy starts stepping in front of people, and there was a gentleman. He had on a top hat, a tweed jacket, and a cane. And he took that cane between the guy's ankles and just made a quick maneuver with it, and the guy fell flat. And then he stepped over him. And when everybody was standing there, when the guy got up and started looking around, they all looked the other way and whistled. I mean, that's what you call patience and organization as a society. I mean, it was a very orderly society. But as they brought in thousands and now millions of these people that don't have that type of social situation, the place is becoming chaos. So the land of the queue has rapidly become the land of the mob and violence. And unless Cameron finds a way to deal with these problems, which are growing dramatically, you know, dear old England's going down in flames. So the point I'm trying to make is Cameron, whether he wins this election or not, is still in huge trouble because he is not representing the will of the people. It's a lot of what goes on in America. You can take it, lift different issues, a little bit different style, but a lot of the same stuff going on because the arrogance is that I know best and they got to do what I say. And it ain't going to fly anymore. I don't think it is.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if you've noticed, and I didn't mean to get veer off subject here, but I'm going to go in a slightly different direction for a moment.
That's okay.
You notice this anybody but Trump stuff, and guess who's at the bottom of it all?
Oh, yeah.
Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney. They're going to try to do
of
this
course.
Because supposedly they know better than everybody else, and we'll just change the rules so people can vote their conscience. I certainly hope they do. Actually, you go ahead and vote your conscience, because I think it'll be an overwhelming, overwhelming first round nomination. I think Trump will walk away.
Well, I think if
he's
they
got
get,
some other issues
you
that he's
going
to have to
got...
deal with, but you know what? I think he'll smoke them. I don't care.
Well,
you know,
I well, he's already starting a different approach. He's already changed his tack a little bit, you know. And you know, the thing about it is he's got to learn the system because that's not what his game has been. He has never been a politician. He's always been outspoken and you know, tell it like it is from the hip. And, of course, as a politician, you've got to temper that a little bit. But you don't want to lose it because if he loses it, he'll lose also. Because if he's no longer Trump, people aren't going to vote for him because they want Trump.
Right.
They want a Trump. I mean, there's some things you need to temper. But as far as the basic philosophy and what he stands for, I mean, same things that Britain's complaining about. We got to stop being overrun by all these people who are coming in and they're bankrupting the country. There was a nurse, I read an article from a British nurse, and, you know, their health system's a disaster anyway. But now you couple it with all these millions of people that are coming in and are getting access to it. And she said there is no way that they can survive. There is no way they can survive with this. And, you know, the parliament guys, they just look the other way. The bureaucrats, you know, the same old thing, just like Washington, because they're not in it. They're not in it. So you know, people are going to have to realize that people who are citizens of a country have got to get the first priority consideration from that government. And if they don't, it's going to be a big problem, everybody, and it, I don't know where it ends. But it's not going to be good. You see it here. You feel it, you know, when you see people. I mean, I go into a store, and I see somebody coming in who can't speak English, and I see them walking up to the counter, and they're checking out with an EBT card, and they're taking crab legs, you know, steak, all this stuff in their basket, and they're checking out. And here I am, a retired Caucasian guy in the store, trying to follow a budget. And I think about this and it bothers me. And I'm not angry at the people. I'm angry at the system. Because, you know, I guess it becomes, and it would apply to Britain right now as well as here in America. So what are the privileges and rights of being a citizen of a country anymore? Are there any? Or is it actually to your detriment? Because when you think about this,
well,
I don't know.
You know,
I don't have the answer anymore.
Well, Jim, you know, I think you put your finger on some of the angst right there. You know, why are we spending more on the average illegal or, you know, here undocumented, we can call, I don't care what you want to call them. They didn't go through the process.
Yep.
You're going to spend more on their kids than on Social Security recipients? Really? You know,
yeah.
I believe the average Social Security recipient is, what, about $13,000 a year, something like that? On average, I think.
Yeah, and then they take out Medicare and taxes, so after that you're...
Well,
yeah,
sure, so you're paying for it three times, essentially. Okay, so what you do then, you paid for it once through your wages, once through your taxes, and then once through the benefit itself. So that's three times, right? So these people walk in, say, oh, you know, here I am, and government spending over $17,000 per. Now, this doesn't include medical care, which we've seen the rise of all kinds of things. I know your wife's in the medical community, so she'll understand. TB, measles, all kinds of things that were eradicated in this country are now starting to flourish.
Guess what's showing up now? You know what's showing up now?
Oh, no, what now?
Bubonic plague.
What?
Bubonic plague.
Oh, isn't that marvelous? Well, that should be one of our all-time favorites, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, bubonic plague. Well, isn't that wonderful? Sooner or later, some of this insanity is going to have to stop. It's just we have to take a breather. I mean, obviously, certain people, you know, we probably can take certain people. We probably ought not to take just simply from our own safety. I'm not saying that we clam up and hold out in the corner and say, oh, no more. But I think we have to be a whole lot smarter about who's here, what they're doing, why. Do they have a job? Do they have a skill? And, you know, you've talked about that with your grandfather as a shipbuilder. Do they have a sponsor? So we know where they are.
Right.
We know what they're doing. We know where they live. We can keep an eye on them. So, in other words, if some of these people are coming in and they're living with Abdul, does Abdul have a job? What's he doing? Where is he doing it? Oh, well, he runs a, you know, some sort of sheet metal shop or something somewhere. Fine. All right.
Building
so the young man is working there. All right. That's great. You know, you follow me? So, in other words, we know who these people are. We don't just release them into the country willy-nilly, you know, through whack and hunt.
No.
They were going to drop 50 of them off in Ames, Iowa somewhere with nowhere to go and nothing to do.
Well, did you hear yesterday? Yesterday in Idaho yesterday of all places, a little 5-year-old girl was gang raped.
Yes. I heard about that.
Some of the people that are brought into town, I'm thinking, you know, come on, people. Here's the thing. Here's where I get upset. When they come across the border screaming and yelling at the people that are to help them, I would turn them right around and say, you're not coming into my country. I think any country should do that. You're crazy when guys come across the border like a lunatic and you just take them in. I mean, what in the world country would do that with any logic whatsoever?
Well, that's because the UN has dictated that that's what they want to have happen. So,
yeah, and that's why, and that's why you got to say no to the UN. That's why you got to say no to the UN, period. And that's what I think the British people are saying in their own way, because the EU and the UN are tied at the hip. They are. They use the same bureaucracy. You know, a lot of this stuff is in Brussels.
It's influenced by people outside of their control. Right. They cannot possibly influence some bureaucrat who has decided. We're going to divvy up these million refugees, blah, blah. You have to take 80,000, you take 100, you know, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, these folks are just floating around. They don't want to assimilate. They don't speak the language. They're not employable. Because they, they don't know what they're doing.
They
have no skills, and they're, as you said before, they're, you know, 17 to 30 or so ish. It's hard to tell, but golly, you know, if I were 30 again, I could do a lot of damage.
They're males, and they're all males.
Yes,
they're all males. That's what's going on.
Right.
So you know, this stuff about I was sent a request for. You know, money for one of these UNICEF programs. It's talking about the children, refugee children. I just wrote them a note back and said, "Look, show me the children." I haven't seen many children.
But
what I've seen is grown, strapping men that are military age. You know, so you know, and hopefully they'll leave me alone. But I mean, that's the problem. Nobody's even looking at it. And you get people here, some of the do-gooders. They say, "Oh, well, we got to help these people because they're destitute." Well, make sure you understand what you're talking about first, because we've got people. I mean, here's what gets me today with what's been going on for the last number of years, and it goes back further than Obama. And I'm talking about the government lying to us. I am naturally skeptical of any report that comes out from the government, because they've proven themselves to, you know, submit falsehoods to us over and over and over again. So it makes you very, very skeptical. The British have the same problem. Matter of fact, I'm sure the French have the same problem, because the bureaucracy just decides it's going to make its own rules and it doesn't care. And by the way, we're in charge, so you got to listen to us. And it's not going to work that way. It's not going to work effectively that way, and that's why the world's about ready to go bust. Because look at the Chinese. They've cooked their books so long, they don't know how bad their financial situation is. But I know this, you can't build 300,000-man cities and never get any rent for the places that you put up and keep them empty and somehow keep your economy going very long. I don't care what kind of government you have. It doesn't work. Look at Venezuela. All the oil in the world, and they can't even get toilet paper. Now they're starving to death down there. So you know, people are fed up, and this is the time for people to speak up the right way, and I think that's what Trump represents. I think that's what Nigel Farage. Remember, old Nigel over there is the one that formed the UKIP party, United Kingdom Independent Party. They're the ones that started this push about Brexit, and he's not even in Parliament anymore. But he's kind of the leader of the pack, if you will, the organizer, and you know, he's done some good stuff. I mean, Cameron and those guys despise the guy because he's been a thorn in their back. So anyway, he just keeps at it, and you got Marine Le Pen over in France. You've got a couple of particularly younger women in Germany that are, you know, the leaders of a lot of the programs in Germany are from old East Germany. Women that are, you know, they finally got their freedom, and by God, they don't want to lose it. And they're Saxony and some of those states, they're just really getting fired up now. So, you know, Merkel's got a problem, because I mean, they're having rallies on weekends with 30 and 40,000 people in the streets saying stop the immigration, you know, and you can only ignore that stuff for so long, you know, you start bringing out the police and get too rough with the water cannon and all the other stuff they do, and then it turns into a full-scale, you know, it's like a mutiny then. So they got to be careful with this stuff. If they don't listen to people,
you know, Jim,
it's growing
everywhere. Politicians seem to think that they're not subject to the whim of the citizens. You send somebody up, and I'll just say, because I don't know about Parliament, but I imagine it works the same way. But you send some senator up there for 24, 30-some-odd years, what does he care about anything that citizens have to say? Unless they get together and say, Senator McCain, it's about time you represented us for a change. We're sick and tired of this. Now, that old guy, he's got a lot of benefits. He's got some serious drawbacks. But what happened was he sort of threw in with the wrong people. And the folks out in Arizona are getting a little tired of this. And that's why he you know, he's in serious, serious trouble. He's probably not going to be
reelected.
I hope
he is, but
I don't know
what really is going on out there.
Well, it appears that people have had enough of, you know, Senator John, that, you know, it's enough. Because he's sort of been everywhere. He's one minute he's telling you can't criticize the president. Next minute he's criticizing the president and then retracting a comment.
Yeah, that's true.
So, well, what is all this about? You just speak the truth and just let it sit. You know, I mean, I think part of it is we're tired of the double talk. We're tired of these things that don't make any sense to the common man. And what I mean by that is semi-informed electorate. You know, you and I read the news.
Yeah.
We do this. People read. They know what's going on. So why the heck are we doing this? This makes no sense. Well, you're not going to get a straight answer from somebody. Department of Justice can't even decide whether they want to release some 9/11 call and what they want to leave out. Now, come on. Seriously, this is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States of America, period. Tell the truth. What did the guy say? Right? Exact language, transferred or transcribed or whatever, you know, from Arabic to whatever, you know, language. Heck, I don't care. Put it in Spanish and English, and we'll read it for ourselves. This is the height of absurdity, that you're willing to go ahead and play with fire. While, you know, there are hot embers burning everywhere. You're asking for trouble. And I don't think we can put up with this too much longer. You know, either we're going to be a subservient state, and I'm talking about serfdom in an old-fashioned kind of sense.
I agree.
You know, instead of the land baron or whatever it is, the guy in Germany, you know, as far as the eye could see, except that we're going to be under the control of some corporations. And this DPP just really bothers me. Why? Because you have no recourse.
It should.
They can do anything they want.
They take it away
from
them.
If they feel as if they've been harmed in any way, they have a little tribunal that'll decide damages. And each country has to pay damages. So any corporation says, well, you know, you harmed us because you told us we couldn't dump these effluents in our drinking water. Well, that cost us lots of money. And then these guys say, well, yeah, they did. Cost them a lot of money to fix that problem. Now, you in whatever jurisdiction that ordered this are now responsible and liable to pay these people for their damages. Kiss my grits. You know, there is such a thing as self-determination, and I think we are really at that point. You know, are we willing to govern ourselves? And I think it comes down to that, and I think this Brexit thing and this rise of nationalism, populism, whatever you want to call it, across the world, is starting to reflect in these types of values and decisions. I think it's great. It's probably a reawakening of individual liberty.
Well, I think it's long overdue. I mean, it's, you know, this has been brewing for 40 years. I mean, this has been brewing for a long, long time, and it's finally gotten to the point where it's, you know, a mass that they really can't put it back in the box again. Yeah, that's what I think. And they think they can. I mean, I'm watching the polls and all the stuff they're talking about now, and, you know, they say, oh, Hillary's doing great and all this kind of stuff. But yet, if you dig a little into them, they're very, very soft. I mean, to the point where she's in big doo-doo. You know, and they don't want to admit it. Of course, the Republicans are doing everything they can, a lot of them, to prop her up, it appears. That's what I worry about. Are they really willing to say we would rather have Hillary and give her two or three more seats on the Supreme Court, you know, so she can wipe out the Second Amendment? Because she will. She would wipe that out.
Yep.
And then what happens? What are people going to do when that happens, you know? And this trade thing, when foreign countries dictate, when foreign countries tell you how many people they're bringing to America for the jobs, because that's in TPP. You know, immigration basically is up to the companies that are working with it to make the decisions. It's not up to a state. It's all crony capitalism, same old stuff. Anyway, it's interesting. I think this vote. I don't know. I'm hoping that. They pass it, you know, that they decide to get out of the EU, because I think, you know, Britain has a lot of capability, and they like free trade, but they want it to be fair free trade.
Fair.
That's what they're looking for. Right. I think they're looking for the same thing that Trump's looking for, you know, and they want to be able
to say, if we want to trade with America, we don't have to worry about that. If the French want our goods and we want something that they produce, then we can work something out directly with them. The EU serves as a filter for all of that.
We don't need Jean-Claude Moron in Brussels to just rubber stamp it before we can do it. That's what they're saying. I really believe they
are. Well, this sovereignty thing is growing, Jim. And the point of the discussion today, I guess, is to let people know it's picking up momentum, and it's probably a good thing. You know, Now, in the long run, there may be some bumps, and I get pretty upset out here. You know, George Soros, oh, the pound will decline, and you know, all this fear.
Oh, it's George Soros.
That old guy that
he tries to sink
Nazi collaborator
countries right
needs
left,
to go away. Just cease and desist, pal. I'll go, you know, go somewhere else. And you know, this whole thing is really coming down to, you know, can you decide for yourself what's best for you, your family, and your local community? And you know, I feel relatively confident that, you know, most people, and I'm just talking about everybody, can probably make that decision for themselves. We don't need some, you know, what is, we don't need some stinking bureaucrat in Brussels telling us what to do.
You know, it's kind of like the boys in the whiskey rebellion.
These old
guys out there said, hey, you didn't give us any money. We're not paying any of your damn taxes, but I'll send you a bottle of hooch, and if you don't like it, get the hell out of my property. That's kind of what was going on, you know, and then they bring out the pitchforks.
Well, you know,
that's very
true.
It is. I know it is. I mean, that's what's going on here. People have had it. And, you know, the British are very proud people, the original Brits, and they don't like being lied to. You know, we got a lot in common with them. You know, our system has a lot in common with the British. That's why, and I think that what scares Europe is if England and America unite in terms of, you know, working together better, that scares the bejeebers out of them. Because, I mean, here goes the old, it's like the original, the old colonies and her old patriarch are getting back together again. That probably scares them a little bit. Because the rest of them in Europe. Why do you think God
in the old colonies?
Why do you think God made?
Yeah.
Well, listen.
Go ahead.
Why do you think God made Britain an island? Because it's not Europe. They left Europe.
Are you saying the two ignore the channel? Ignore the channel. It's not there.
I thought you may be right, but if you throw in
Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and some of the other colonized areas that originally came up through, you know, the old Commonwealth. You throw that all together, that's a pretty powerful unit right there. You think about the economies of these places. You think about the resources. You think about the manufacturing capabilities. You talk about the education level. You talk about science and all that. That would probably scare more people than you know. My guess is that Europe is a dying entity, and I would think that going forward, looking at, you know, the rise of Asia and this, all of it, we would have to do something like that just to maintain some sort of equilibrium with the growth that is happening in that part of the world. And it actually makes perfect sense. Now, you think about it. All of the landmass, the United States, Canada, all of these, like Australia, just huge deposits of minerals and all down there.
You can't leave out India either. You can't leave out India. People forget about India.
Now that's interesting. I hadn't even thought about that that's a whole lot of folks.
India was trained under the British system. Why do you think they have such good administrators? They really do. They were trained under the British system. They got some problems because they got some minorities that create havoc in there. But India, you know, India knows how to govern, knows how to operate, and get things done. So that's why they're going to be a powerhouse in their own right. You can see that coming. But anyway, this is an interesting topic, and I think Thursday I'm going to kind of keep my fingers crossed here. A lot of people say you're crazy if that happens. I said, no, I don't think so. Yeah, there are going to be some problems initially. There always are, but they'll work it out. They're smart people. They'll work it out, and it'll be fine, and they'll be able to settle all that crap down, and then they'll be able to use British law instead of all this stuff that's been set up, like the city of Manchester has basically become a Sharia colony, pretty much. And, you know, that's just not appropriate. I'm sorry. You either want to be British or you want to be American or you want to be whatever you are, but you can't be something else if you want to live here. You got to be part of our system. That's what sovereignty is all about. We accept people who want to be part of us.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it works. Anyway, let's end it on that. What do you say?
We've gone
50
one.
Minutes. So.
Here's
what I'm going to.
Go ahead.
You got a last word or anything?
No, I think you said it very well, and it's short,
okay.
Succinct, and to the point. So carry on.
Well, very good, Mark. Very good. I'm glad to have you with us, folks. That's our discussion, and we'll find out Thursday night what is going to happen in Britain. But either way, as I said, it's not over, because there are going to be a lot of issues. They've still got to deal with all that internal mess that they've already got, and they got to figure out a way to solve it. So they got their work cut out for them, just like we do. What I'm going to do now is we're going to shut her down with some music. And I had a song picked out, but I just changed it, and it's going to be a song about, I play this quite frequently, it's kind of my protest song, but it's what happens if Britain doesn't do something and America doesn't either. And before we get there, I just want to say that if you like the show and you want to pass it on to other people, they can find it at blogtalkradio.com/North Florida Writer Live. That's blogtalkradio.com/North Florida Writer Live. I do about 3 or 4 shows a week. My next one will be on Friday night. I'm going to try to finish the one that we had on housing and urban development. We were talking about the problem with guesting refugees into North Florida when we suddenly went off the air. Was it a coincidence? Was it weather? I don't know. But Darlene Pafalo, a realtor here in Gainesville, Florida, will be back with me, and we'll try to finish our program, God willing, and the creek don't rise, and there isn't any interference from other sources. Let's just leave it at that. Anyway, folks, it's always fun to have you with us, and Mark, it's good to have you. We're going to close out today with what's the world going to be like if we don't get things straightened out? Well, it means we're going to be driving on the highway to hell. God bless you, folks. See you again soon. Have a great day. Bye now.